true leadership, in my opinion, starts by leading yourself. It doesn't start with leading others. Do the journey inside yourself. Even when you get to lead people, it's a never-ending journey because it's always incremental.
Gio, I'm so happy to have you on Unmatched tonight.
There's a lot of things that we don't know, and we don't know what we don't know.
Gio is not your average strategic thinker.
My role is chief duck at What the Duck.
Okay, we need to pause here for a second.
We don't need to pretend to be someone else. I have a Spirescore t-shirt for every day of the week.
He's an idea generator with a relentlessly curious mind.
We need to allow play so we can learn. And I think the more we play, the better leader we will be.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Unmatched. Today, we have as a guest my friend Gio, who is not your average strategic thinker. He is an idea generator with a relentlessly curious mind. And in the past 20 years, he held various creative roles for some of the most loved brands like Lego, Candy Crush, Angry Birds, Disney, and IKEA, just to name a few. Gio, I'm so happy to have you on Unmatched tonight.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm a big fan of yours, so I'm really happy to be here today.
Oh, amazing. The feeling is mutual. We're already friends. And actually, we met over Funkos and Legos, and that is something that we have in common. So I am so excited to start to talk to you about all that. But before that, we have a tradition on this podcast to ask our guests what their story is and what basically led them to what they're doing today. So I will ask you exactly the same, Gio. What is your story and what are you doing?
So the story is a 20 more years long story if we think about professionally. So I'm currently based in Sweden. This is where the story took me in the past 20 years. But actually started my career in Italy, where I'm from. But then I was, as I mentioned earlier, my curiosity took me to many places. I originally graduated as an interior designer, but then I'm like, maybe this is not something I want to do. So I moved to London, I studied graphic design, I started working in agency. I lived in London for about 10 years, to the point that at some point I wanted to change. And I quit my job. I went to Africa traveling and camping on a truck for 3 months. And I came back. I found a job at Lego at the time. And my career took me to many places. I have a deep love for traveling. Traveling is one of my main passion. And I managed to combine my traveling with my working. So that was what made me sort of happy at the time, because you can do the things that you love. It brings you joy, but you also can explore the world. So when I traveled, I moved to Singapore. I lived in Asia for about 3.5 years before moving to Sweden more recently. And this is more the geographical journey, if you know what I mean. But the journey was more of a creative journey, a little bit of introspection, understanding who I am before understanding what I wanted. Because when you're a creative, I think settling down to the first job or your first career path can be, I wouldn't call it a mistake, but it will stop a lot of opportunities that you can have along the way. So I would say that the first 10, 15 years of my career, I really loved exploring. Exploring as much as possible and trying new things. I remember, as you mentioned, Disney. I worked for Disney from an agency side and was doing packaging for Disney at the time. And now I'm doing video games. So my career took me to many different places, different industries. So yeah, that's a little bit of the journey.
I love that. And we have that in common too, because my first job was at Disney. So even one more thing that we have in common. Now, I want to talk about the personal journey.
Yeah.
At the same time as the professional journey, because as we know, these things tend to intertwine and they kind of merge together in a very magical way. But before we go into that, can you tell us what you do today?
So today, my role is chief duck at What the Duck.
Okay, we need to pause here for a second and explain what that is.
Yes, I decided that at this stage of my career, I don't want to take myself too seriously for who I am, but I want to take my job seriously. So I founded this company called What the Duck. It's a company that does Lego Serious Play workshops. So it's basically your standard workshop, but using Lego Serious Play.
I came prepared.
I love it. I have some bricks here, but I try not to use it because usually they get very noisy with the microphone. So Lego Serious Play is a fantastic method that really unlocks knowledge, because there's a lot of things that we don't know, and we don't know what we don't know, but Lego Serious Play helps you unlocking and getting to learn more knowledge, because it's all about using hands, playing with the bricks. And if you think, 80% of our brain cells are connected with our hands. So there's a lot of learning that we can do with the hand. So why Chief Duck? Again, I want playfulness in my life. And I think company need a lot of playfulness these days. There's a lot of companies that take themselves a little bit too seriously, in my opinion. And I would love to inject a bit of that playfulness in their day-to-day life, especially when we do workshop together, because they might have a very serious job like a bank or no-profit organization. But when they do this workshop, they need to bring back the playfulness to then apply to their day job. But the main purpose of the workshop for me became a little bit more clear around 5 years ago. 5 years ago, I started having an interest in leadership, more so creative leadership. So my purpose for this specific workshop is bring more leadership to the top of organization. If you think big organization, creative thinking is mostly at the middle level of the organization, but is a little bit lacking at the top. And I don't mean taking a creative or a chief of creative and putting it at the top, but allowing non-creative people to unlock that creative brain that we all have. We just need to find the courage and the bravery to be creative. So this is my mission and purpose in a little bit with what the Duck that I only started a year ago, to be honest, but I've been a Lego Serious Play facilitator for the past 3-4 years.
And, you know, you said something earlier that resonates a lot with me. And I use this phrase a lot as well, by the way, which is, you don't know what you don't know. And it's in its simplicity, I just find it so brilliant, because you're unknowingly so ignorant to so many things that are happening in the world. And obviously, you cannot know it all. And that's even not the purpose. But having this curiosity of being open to figure things out and keep exploring beyond, you know, your age and your status and your level, your title, whatever that is such an important thing. And I would love for you to tell us a little bit, what are your main findings out of these workshops that you're doing? What are the main sort of takeaways that you're saying, okay, I see these things happening across leadership so consistently, no matter the industry?
I think that's a very interesting question, because when I look about leadership, and I'm talking mostly about big organizations because my experience is from big companies, I think it's less so for a startup, for example. But when I look at leadership, unfortunately, I believe there's not much diversity at the top. I want more women at the top. I want more less represented backgrounds at the top, people of colors, for example. And I think that will bring a little bit more creativity to start with, but also a little bit more different way of thinking. That goes without saying, but a little bit more bravery. Because when you think about minority background or women, for example, they have that bravery that a lot of leaders might lack in the old context. And my finding was a lot in line also what Brené Brown described in her books, that a lot of leaders are wearing an armor, so they're not being their true self. And that armor, that barrier, that persona that they create to be the leader that they think they should be, doesn't allow them to take risk, for example, doesn't allow them to be creative. Because if they fail, then their image is impacted in a way. So my finding mostly is that people are creative. I think we are all creative, but we need to find that bravery and that courage to be able to be creative. And you need a safe space, of course, in your company. But also you can be guided to get brave and to be creative. Now, I'm not saying that this applies to every company, but there's a lot of male brave leaders, but I appreciate that with more diversity, you will come more brave. But especially when you think about minority background, they have been very brave in terms of fighting for their survival, and that's in their DNA. So taking risk for them is part of the is a lifestyle, because if you don't take risk, you're not gonna get to that next step. So I think leadership at the moment, without disrespect or stereotyping, is very macho driven. And I think it's very much about the muscle. But I hope we go to a point, like Brené Brown says, to be more leading from the heart. We don't need to pretend to be someone else. We can be our true self, belong to ourselves, and still be amazing leaders, even if we don't have all the answers, even if we are failing. But at least we have that bravery and that courage to try new things, for example.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much to unpack here, right? Because on one side, and I fully agree, by the way, I do see the same things across the industry, and I feel that there's the same type of need of diversity, representation of different, you know, ways of thinking, people, different backgrounds, cultures, and so on. But also, I think we need to reinvent a little bit this idea of what success looks like. And I think a lot of us, maybe in our generation, are starting to figure it out, that actually success is much more related to figuring out of living in alignment with who you are, doing the things that fit well with you, as opposed to you fitting in boxes that don't belong to you. But that's a journey, right? And I guess this is where you mentioned before the your personal journey of becoming who you are. And I'm wondering, like, what are the parallels that you see there with this idea of leadership and the needs that we see across the board? Why do you think, is there like a wide awakening that you're noticing, or is it kind of there, but still a lot to be done in that respect?
I'm going to start with the last part of the question. I think I can see a little bit more of the awakening because people talk about it more. I think with social media, podcasts, LinkedIn, these conversations are happening a little bit more in the open, but they're not as fast as I would like them to be in terms of change. I'm not very patient, I have to say, when it comes to these things, and I'd like the change to be now. But I think I can see little incremental situations. I had an amazing leader 3 years ago in another company, an amazing woman, but really led through the heart. She really started making me think about what good leadership is. And I'm so grateful for her to get me started on my journey. Because also thanks to her, I became, I think, a better leader, a better person. But until somebody tell you what you don't know, then you cannot change it. So you need somebody to give you that wake-up call and also to shine a light on a blind spot that you might have. And that's a little bit also what the workshop are trying to do. So I think the change is happening, but it needs to happen a little bit faster. Especially I work in tech, games, that change is even slower, in my opinion, because tech industry, for example, is not seen as a female career path, for example, which is wrong. There's a lot of great female engineer and a lot of female leaders in tech as well. But true leadership, in my opinion, starts by leading yourself. It doesn't start with leading others. So you really need to do that journey inside yourself. It's a lot of introspection, it's a lot of self-reflection. Even when you get to lead people, that journey doesn't stop. It's a never-ending journey because it's always incremental improvement in a way. But for what concern my path, I would say I started maybe owning more who I am, I would say 5-7 years ago. And that was a journey. It wasn't easy, to be honest, because I think sometimes it's easy to fit in because you just need to change who you are, and then you get accepted by the group, by the tribe. So in a way, you don't create a lot of problem, but it's something so wrong in that, in my opinion, because nobody should change to be pleasing others, for example. And that would happen a lot in leadership, because when you're at the top of a big organization, you try to be liked. Everybody wants to be liked. Let's not escape that.
Yeah, it's human nature in the end.
It is human nature, absolutely. But I think there are ways and ways to be liked. And I start learning that it is okay to be who I am. And I'm proud to be who I am now. And I wouldn't change a single thing of who I am. Of course, it doesn't mean that I don't want to negotiate things when I'm at work or improve things that are not great in, let's say, my performance at work. But this is not part of the core of who I am. It's part of the branches that sit outside my persona. But the core, the true core of who we are, that shouldn't change. Nobody should ask us to change, and we should own it. But it takes a long time to get to that point.
I know. And in my experience, it doesn't only take a long time, but it also takes what I call the critical moment of truth.
Yeah.
Something transformational to happen in your life, something that disrupts the pattern that you are originally on. That's my theory. At least in my case, that's what generated my journey around 2 years ago. And I think that without that critical moment of truth, you are not pushed to take the next step. So I'm curious, was there a sort of transformational moment that kind of like led you to make that decision to say, okay, like no more of this pattern, let's try something new?
I think it might be maybe not a specific moment. I think every experience that I had in my life, my career, made me change a little bit for the better and towards that owning who I am and true belonging of who I am. I think the moment of truth maybe came 3-4 years ago when I mentioned that I met that amazing leader. She led me for 3 years in a previous company. She really explained, what does it mean belonging? What does it mean fitting in? And then sort of ring a bell inside myself, thinking, okay, I don't need to change who I am to be successful, for example, to be liked. But you can still be who you are and still be proud of it. And I think that's something that is so difficult because it requires first that moment of truth. And some people might not get it because they don't have that amazing experience or they don't meet that amazing person. But somehow I think as that we managed to sort of got to that direction and also this responsibility to guide other people to understand what belonging really means for us. And maybe that experience could also inspire other people or help them understanding who they are and own themselves in a way, their story and who they are.
And I think this is the moment where we also need to be a bit honest with our audience and say that owning who you are and owning that narrative that you know that is completely yours is never easy. Never easy to start on that path. What was the main challenge that you encountered when you kind of started to explore that for yourself?
For me, it's mostly a journey of also exploring my emotions. And sometimes it sucks to explore some emotions that are not the happiness, it's not the joy, but they're still valid because they're telling us something. The disappointment of failing at work or failing in life or failing in relationship, for example, that's not an easy emotion to digest and to explore. Usually we want to put on the side the emotion that we don't like. Okay, those can go under the carpet. But I think those emotions should be as equal as the happy emotion. I think Brené Brown talked a lot about you cannot enjoy the light, and I'm only paraphrasing here. You cannot really fully enjoy the life if you don't appreciate also the darkness. And I think there is a lot to that I appreciate. I think for many years, I've been what I call a toxic positive because I was brought up in a way that, oh no, you must be happy. Everything happened for a reason. Or only good vibes only. And then I started exploring that actually, that was putting me in a bad spiral because that search for happiness that always have to be there, then it doesn't let you really address the problems that other emotions are telling you. And when we address those emotions, we're sort of doing an act of kindness to ourselves, even though in the moment, it sucks big time to really understand those emotions.
And I think it has a positive impact on the people around us as well, doesn't it? Because it sounds like a positive thing. Yeah, I'm positive all the time. I'm optimistic, but to a certain degree, because life is all the different shades of gray, right? So you cannot just be always positive. And I think that for other people, it's different traits. You know, for me, it was the quest for perfection and for achievement and being the best, you know, the top student in the class since I was in school, to being the best at work and always never failing. And, you know, and I think that the downside with that is that, especially in leadership, you need to be approachable. You know, you need to be relatable. How can you be relatable to your team if you're projecting this image of perfection that doesn't actually exist, right? So I think that this is where I believe that, and very strongly, that emotions do have a place at work, because simply for this, the reason that we're not machines, we are humans. Yeah, not yet, at least. So being humans, you know, it comes with a full package. It's not like you can leave your emotions at the door as you go into the office and then take them back in your backpack and just like go home. So it feels a bit unnatural to deal with that in that way. Now, what I'm curious about is, how do you see the difference in between the different generations? My observation is that, you know, the younger generation has a much better understanding of those emotions and are much more self-aware than, you know, millennials, for example. You know, if we look at Gen Zs versus millennials, how do you observe those differences, if any, in the workshops that you do?
I think there's a lot of differences. I think that mostly the difference is because the way we've been brought up, because we've been always said, oh, you have to be happy. You always have to, the perfection, the goal is the smile. We always saw the smiley everywhere. And I love the smiley, don't get me wrong. I even have smiley Dr. Martens that I wear every day. But that agenda of having happiness as the ultimate goal is what put happiness at a 10 out of 10 scale. And then you have an happiness at a 0 out of 10. And all the in-between are not even considered to start with. But with the younger generation, I think there is a new world, also because mental health, for example, is not a taboo anymore as it is for our generation. I think our generation started a little bit talking about mental health. And when I think about taking care of all the emotion, discovering all the emotion, and also introspectively look at our emotion, that's also part of mental health, because you are being kind to yourself and you're helping your mental health when you don't put under the carpet those bad emotions. So I think younger generation, in a way, don't have that taboo of bad emotion or mental health in the same way that we had. And they are more open to talk about it, to be honest. While we still have that barrier, because we cannot say that we are sad. We cannot say that life sucks. But it does suck a lot of time. So I think it's important that we say it. And it might be that one day that life sucks, but the other days are great. But we need to acknowledge why that day was not so great in the end.
Yeah, and I think that's a great message. You know, it's a lot of ups and downs. And that's what makes life also interesting and colorful, right? How boring would it be if it would all be roses and butterflies and whatever. Yeah. And the other thing is also, we spend so much time at work. You know, we're spending an average of 8 hours a day. Some of us more, you know, some less, but a lot of us in the corporate environment, in bigger companies, that's sort of the average. Now, in 8 hours a day, there's a lot that can happen. It's mainly the whole day that you spend with people that are not your closest family members or friends. Right. So if you actually dig deeper into it, it's actually very unnatural, you know? And so I wonder how you see that kind of evolving over time, and also like what potential solutions we can see into that.
Yes, we spend a lot of time at work. That's sometimes we don't think about it because it's routine and it just goes by. But I think it's important to have a great experience at work. And by great experience, I don't mean a happy experience all the time. Because as my previous lead, the one that I mentioned earlier, she was always saying, we are not in the business of making people happy, which I love, because happiness is also something that is different for everybody. What is happiness for me is totally different for everybody else. What brings me joy is different from everybody else. But in the context of work, I think leadership play a crucial role in terms of not only validating all the emotion, because it's so easy to put posters and values and everything as corporate work does, but I think there's a lot of work to be done in terms of training leadership at this stage. What I'm lacking at this moment is empathy. Empathy is something that I'm not experiencing much at top leadership levels, to be honest.
Why do you think that is? I'm curious.
For me, is empathy means also diversity will bring empathy, because once you experience different backgrounds, different genders, you already build the muscle of empathy, and empathy need to build must be built every day. It's just not, oh, I do a training and now I have empathy, I'll add it on LinkedIn as a skill. So, you know, it is a muscle that need to be trained, but also is about listening to people, because the role of the leader for me is also being there for your team, meaning that you need to hold space when some people might not feel at their 100% best. So sometimes leaders don't have the tool. First, they don't have empathy. Then they don't have the tool on how to behave if somebody feels so bad at work one day. And I think it's important to know how to be there for others, because otherwise we turn into the toxic positive. And then we disregard those emotion. We don't help that person. And actually that person will feel even worse. And then it's a circle to what I was saying at the beginning. The more we create empathy, the more we're there for other people, the more we hold space, the more people will feel they belong to that place. Because they don't need to change who they are. Let's think about happiness as a goal. What if I'm not happy today? Do I need to change my feeling to fit in that goal? Or can I have a lead that holds space for me? And I can be my true self, even if I'm not feeling great today. But tomorrow I might be better. But in this moment, I can be here, not feeling 100%. That for me is true belonging in a company. And I hope more will happen in the future.
Yeah, totally agree. I was talking to one of my friends recently, my friend Ralph, and we both come from similar backgrounds. Let's just say not first world countries, right? So like countries that we've experienced, you know, enough hardship in our lives, and we get to appreciate when we are in nice environments with nice offices and nice canteens and nice gyms and all those perks that companies have. And we were just talking that, you know, even when you get to the higher levels within that company, having that background experience of coming from those places, having internalized and lived through those times, in my case, in communism with restrictions and limitations and a whole different world, it's almost like it makes you see the world differently. It gives you a different level of appreciation for the things that you get to enjoy. And I think this is where I connect a lot with what you said earlier about representation, you know, representation across everything, all the spectrum of different, of diversity and ways of thinking and different backgrounds and religions and genders and orientations or whatever, because having that mix allows companies to truly understand their consumers, right? Because if you have at the top just a 1% of your whole consumer base, how are you going to know, you know, what they need from you as a brand?
And that's still, I think it's still the same circle of empathy, as you mentioned, and understanding others in a way. And when I mean empathy and understanding others, that's just not your immediate team, but also your customers, for example. Because if you don't have that empathetic mindset, then it will make it more difficult to understand other human beings, but not be the same exact replica as you as a top leader of a company. So I think it's important, and I think it will change because the world is getting more global for right and wrong reasons somehow, but more people are working in different countries, from other countries, from different backgrounds. I just need more. I am a little bit tired of waiting, to be honest, because we still talk about women, gender, pay gap. And I'm like, didn't we start talking about it 30 years ago? Can we just do it? and change it. So yeah, there's a lot of patience that we need to exercise, but I think change should be a little bit faster as well.
Well, you play your role in that with your What the Dog workshops, which I love that name so much. So I want us to go back to your Lego serious play. And I just stole this from my kids, basically. It wasn't me. I didn't create this. This is my son, Noah, who built it. He's super great with Legos. And as I told you, we build Legos every day in this house. So, you know, both my kids are big fans. Explain to me how that reveals what you need to know. What is the process? How do you reveal through that serious but still play that aspect that we don't know about ourselves yet?
So Lego Serious Play is a facilitated format. So you need to have a proper facilitator like me. I'm certified by Lego Serious Play Master Trainers. It's using Lego Bricks, of course. We're not associated with the Lego Group company, but we use that product, as you can imagine. Now, it all starts with the hands. We do what we say, thinking with your hands. Now, if you think when you were a child, you learn a lot through your hands. You learn that, oh, I touch this, is odd. Don't touch it anymore. I'm going to burn myself. So in the same way, you will answer a question posed by the facilitator, in this case me. You will have a couple of minutes to build the answer, but you don't have much time to think. So most of the time you just build, and then you give a meaning to what you build. Now, it's not a representation 101 of reality, but you play with metaphors, you play with storytelling. And for me, this is the beauty of Lego Serious Play, because storytelling is something that really links people together. It's where the emotion comes out. It's not just writing on a post-it in a workshop, which is a little bit dry. I mean, it is okay to write on a post-it. There's nothing wrong with that. But with Lego Serious Play, you can tell millions of stories, for example. Now, the workshop is done in a way that is super inclusive. I'm not a fan of brainstorming anymore. Like, I hate brainstorming. Now, as I am a creative, and I hate brainstorming, because brainstorming, usually, you have the very dominant extrovert with an idea, and the other people will follow that idea. But Lego Serious Play give equal time, equal brick, and equal explanation of your idea to the audience. So everybody is sort of on equal terms. They start from the same level playing field, which I love. Each workshop also is different. So if you attend a workshop, the next time you attend another one will be different, because it's tailor-made for the need of whoever needs the workshop at that specific time. It could be a two-hour workshop. It could be 3 days workshop. So depend on the how big is the problem that you try to solve. The other thing that I absolutely love on Lego Serious Play is empowering people. I love that I can empower people with finding what they don't know, because that's, for me, is the beauty of being a facilitator, because you're instrumental to guide them, but you don't give them the answer, and the workshop is not going to give you the answer, but it gives you the tool to find the answer yourself. There's a lot of exercises that you can do about understanding more yourself, for example, or understanding more of the company you work for, setting goals, strategy. So anything you have a problem, you can solve it with Lego Serious Play. I know people that use Lego Serious Play to plan family summer vacations as well. So you can use it for whatever.
You need to teach me how to do that. That would come very much handy, yes, in this family.
And the other great thing of Lego brings people together, because they find the playfulness of the bricks, but also you get to know more about each other. Because when you tell your story, you tell the story through your brick model, so you don't even look each other in the eyes, but it's all through the model. Also, the people around you will get to know you a little bit better. And when you put that in a work context, it shows a little bit more of who you are. And I believe that people that understand more of each other also will perform better together. So there's a lot of great things. Now, I don't want to self-promote my workshop, but I really believe in the power of the brick.
What is it? What was the most transformational sort of outcome that you had in one of your workshops that you think, wow, like really, I saw this transformation happen with this person or this group in like one workshop?
Let me think. Usually we don't reveal what we talk in the workshops. I'm going to keep it a little bit top line because what we discuss in the workshop stays in the workshop because we want to create a safe space from this reason. But there was a workshop a couple of years ago. I was doing it from game company, mostly for a team to understand more of the team member and mostly roles and responsibilities because it was a new team, but didn't really got to know each other really well. There were team members that were working there for a longer time and some team members that were fairly new. So it was very important for them to get to know each other. What was for me unpredictable at the time was that this person started crying because they revealed something they were not expecting to reveal during the workshop. So that aha moment came to them and to the rest of the group, of course. So that for me was interesting to see because the brick unlocked to understand that what that person was going through was impacting their ability to perform at the time. And that was very instrumental for the rest of the team to understand, okay, we didn't know this.
And that's to create empathy, right? Which is what you were talking about earlier.
Exactly, empathy, but also now they are empowered with tools to support that person. But in any other context, like they wouldn't have written this on a post-it, for example. They wouldn't have a safe space to discuss it. Or maybe they wouldn't have the trigger to say, okay, this is affecting me and I didn't know that before. So that was very interesting. I think was the most interesting workshop I've done. I think that was that one.
Do you have the feeling that as adults and especially as leaders in these companies, we tend to forget what play is all about, or that we forget to actually play? I mean, the reason why I'm asking this is because everything throughout our day is all about being serious. There's a lot of implications, there's KPIs, there's teams, members that you need to care about. There's like job to be done, right? Like there's so many things, right, that you need to go through in your day as a leader, especially in a big company, right? And I don't know about you, but I feel like when I look at my kids and how they play, this easiness of as you say, using their hands to create something new, I don't see it reflected in the people around me or even in myself. Sometimes it kind of goes away. And I wonder what you think about that.
I think you're totally right. And I think there's a lot of studies also about play being important, also for adults. We learn through play. Your kids, when they're playing, they are learning a lot because they most likely are also role playing. Maybe they play police and robbers or whatever they're playing. That's learning skills that they will keep them for their own life. Now, there is nothing wrong with being playful when we are adults, but I think it's a concept of playful, being playful as seen as a childish thing. It's not a serious thing. I actually now have a bag of bricks, little bag of bricks, which I suggest everybody to keep in their backpack. I use it in meetings just to play, to keep a little bit of playfulness also in my life. And I think it's important to give opportunity play for adults, and doesn't mean just Lego bricks, for example, but stop taking ourselves too seriously. By saying that, I don't mean not taking the work seriously. The work can be serious, but we need to allow moment of fun, moment of playfulness, to allow the serious business to be serious at the same time, because it's the yin and yang somehow. And that's why it's called Lego Serious Play, because it's playful, but it's serious at the same time. Because through play, you learn, but you try to unlock bigger challenges. And I believe if we're more playful and we introduce more play, we will be better at taking risks. We will be better at be ready for difficult situation. Because this is what also Lego Serious Play help you with, is allow you to be prepared for a big change happening, for example. There's a lot of organizational changes in the world as we see at the moment. But we need to allow play so we can learn how to cope also when these big changes happen. When we fail, for example, I think we need to build this muscle through play. And I think the more we play, the better leader we will be.
I'm into that. And also because the world is in constant change, so we do need to be very adaptable. And I love this, what you just said, and it kind of like reminds me of this quote from Alexander McQueen that I just came across the other day that says, the world needs more fantasy because the reality just does the job of bringing you down anyway. And yes. I cannot agree with that more. I think we need more magic. I think we need more fantasy. It doesn't mean that we're not going to do the job right, you know? So it's like separating the fact that the work can be done, but it can be done with a lot more fun and laughter and magic and purpose, you know?
Yes. And to add to that, when you think about being playful, not necessarily just with Lego bricks, let's park the bricks, but anything. You can be playful with painting, going to the park, or do something that for you is playful. The world at the moment is very heavy. We need to allow also playfulness in order to light up a little bit our lives. Of course, we take into consideration what happened to the world, yes, but also we need to allow playfulness for our mental health, for example. That's also an important part. Then when I look about innovation, playfulness will bring you more innovative mind because, as you mentioned, role-play fantasies, role-play what doesn't exist, that's already the path to innovation on its own. So the more we try to shape that type of behavior, I think the more brave leader to start with, the more creative leader and the more innovative leader at the same time.
And to kind of finish that off on a less serious note, let's talk about your t-shirt, your Spice Girls t-shirt there. I know there's a story behind. I actually have my Super Puma t-shirt and I have can you see the Freddie Mercury Funko in yes. the background? He's always there in every single podcast because Freddie is my main guy and, you know, I'm a big fan. But tell me the story of that t-shirt. I know there's something big around that.
Yeah, it is every Spice Girls t-shirt, I would say. I have many. I don't have only one. I think I might have, and that will be a LinkedIn post. I have a Spice Girls t-shirt for each day of the week.
I love but that. Let me... Do you have to write it?
Yes. But there is a meaning that is very personal to me. And when you grew up in a small town in Italy as a gay boy, wearing a Spice Girls t-shirt, you are a target. You are a target for bullies. And I know we wanted to be lighter, but it's going to be light. So wearing a t-shirt like this, you don't do it because it's difficult. But when you grow up, you still love the Spice Girls because I still love them. And I will always love them. And then still you feel, you start your job, maybe I don't wear the Spice Girls t-shirt. People will judge me. People will think that I'm, oh my gosh, this wacky kid. Now I wear them. I have a Spice Girls t-shirt for every day of the week. I have Spice Girls t-shirt for the weekend, for Christmas.
So I love it.
I realize that I don't want anybody to tell me if it's right or wrong to wear a Spice Girls t-shirt. I will wear it. It's me. I love the Spice Girls. Sounds weird, but this, and that's another LinkedIn post for how the Spice Girls shaped my career. But it's very important because they were telling me when I was a 16 years old boy, the thing that I should have done at the time, believe in yourself. You are worthy of yourself. You are great. Belong. These are the things that they were teaching those fans in the 90s. But it took me 20 years to get those lessons inside me. So now I hold them close and I wear my Spice Girls t-shirt. Even if I go to a job interview, I will wear it.
Doesn't it feel good though?
It feels great.
To own that?
Yes. And also it's making me feel 200% lighter because then I can spend the energy doing other things. Because I don't need to worry about what I'm wearing or who I am being. I just being myself.
And like I like to say, you know, like this is the package that you're getting. Like you're taking it all or nothing. This is what it is. The full
exactly,
package.
They will see a lot of Spice Girls t-shirts. Yeah. So that's a given. And say similarly on LinkedIn, people might find it maybe a little bit off topic, but I sometimes I post about Spice Girls. But I actually found a lot of people relating to that type of content. And I'm like, oh, Ben, I'm not alone. Maybe also was a lot in my head.
Yeah, and also the thing that they say is you are the audience, basically. You are the niche. So you're creating for yourself, and then you're just attracting the same type of people that would love the same things that you do, which is the beautiful thing of the internet these days.
It is.
And of being part of a community, globally, which is how we two met, and how beautiful it is that we can have this conversation today. So on that note, I want to thank you for taking the time today. And it was such a cool, great, amazing, fulfilling conversation. I wish you all the best with What the Duck. And I love that concept. And I can't wait to talk again soon.
Thank you so much for having me, first of all. It was great. I really enjoyed the talk, the chat. And hopefully I can meet you one day and we can do a proper LEGO Serious Play session.
I'm sure we will. I think it's on both of our wish list.
It is.
To make it happen. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.